950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Oh, that's the young and spry 80-year-old Bob Dylan right there on his birthday. Paul Metza, of course, our Power Radio Hour, Wall of Power Radio Hour is here 6 to 7 on Saturday nights. Paul, of course, an iconic musician himself from the Northland, is kind enough today to join us to talk about Bob Dylan's birthday as well as his long-term legacy. Hi, Paul.
Hey, man. Thanks for calling.
No, my pleasure. Thank you. I know this is a busy day for you. You had cake up there. You're at his house.
We had cupcakes, and they actually had a really nice birthday cake. I texted you the photo, so you can probably post it at your convenience. But, yeah, I came up last night. I was invited to play a song for the Duluth Does Dylan CD recording project. I think this is the seventh year. So I came up and I recorded Bob Dylan's Dream last night. And the timing was perfect. We didn't plan on me being here for his birthday. But as I was, I took part in a great celebration right at the Bob Dylan Child at Home on 3rd Avenue East. There was musicians and a St. Louis County commissioner read a proclamation. They named it the Bob Dylan Year in St. Louis County, and a lot of cool people, and the cake was really good.
Well, and it is wonderful that we can still celebrate such a unique talent and a unique legacy. You know, from I always like starting talking about you because you are a phenomenal musician, and you're iconic with your own career and your own sound. But you can't deny the fact that you yourself, talk about how much you were driven by Bob Dylan.
Oh, I used to, Matt. You know, I grew up in Virginia, Minnesota. You know that town.
Oh, yeah.
You got to live there.
Oh yeah,
20 miles east of Hibbing. So when I was in junior high and high school, occasionally I'd hitchhike over and just stand in front of his house on 7th Avenue, just a few blocks south of the Hibbing High School. And I'd look at that front door, Matt, and I'd go, you know, the guy that walked out of that front door as a young man went out and changed American culture and songwriting as we know it. So he's remained a great inspiration, and that he's still working, getting ready to go on the road again and just put out one of his greatest records, Rough and Rowdy Ways, at 80 years old is just a phenomenal testament to his work ethic, which is, as far as I'm concerned, Matt, it's an iron range work ethic. His guitar is his lunch pail, and off to work he goes day after day for 60 plus years.
You can't deny that. And I think for me, where I see Bob Dylan everywhere still today is not so much over like 1st Avenue, 7th Street entry, but the times I've gone around and I'll see some 17-year-old kid with a guitar and he's just sitting on a park bench or he's in a coffee house and he or she feels as if they've got enough to say and it's important for them to try to say it and that the idea that they can be someone from nowhere and yet they still have something major to say and have the ability to do that through music. I think that's something you see. I don't care the genre. I don't care the individual. That is still, that's the Dylan influence today.
Oh, absolutely. He's opened so many doors for so many people. And he's got fans like Lady Gaga, Tony Bennett, and Kanye West, and rappers and blues cats and jazz cats. You know, the other thing I want to say, speaking about Northern Minnesota, Bob, he's won the Academy Awards and Grammy Awards, sold 200 million records. But in 2016, he won the Nobel Prize for Literature.
Yes.
And you can trace that right back to his 11th and 12th grade humanities and English teacher, a fella I had the pleasure of meeting. I actually interviewed him. We played the interview on the Wall and Power Radio Hour, and his name was B.J. Rolfson. And he said Bob was one of his best students, and I heard that B.J. told me that Bob came up to him at an event in Hibbing. I think somebody had passed away, and he saw him at the synagogue, and as he was walking out, Bob walks up to Mr. Olson and said, BJ, he said, you are my greatest influence. So I think the Iron Range work ethic combined with the power of the St. Louis County school system created the groundwork for a young Bobby Zimmerman to become Bob Dylan, who hitchhiked to New York in January with a guitar, and who hitchhikes in the middle of winter to New York from Minneapolis? An Iron Ranger.
Someone that doesn't think it's that cold. That's one of the better points, too, I think, is that one of the things I've come to realize is that there's a lot of people, I think, in Minnesota that resented Dylan because they felt like he left. And the reality is that he was never escaping Minnesota. That, as you just described perfectly, the Minnesota permeated him, and he just took it elsewhere. It was never about abandoning the past. It was about embracing who he was.
That's exactly it. And he still, you know, he's got a farm west of town. I heard he's got a couple of buddies that have lake cabins outside of Hibbing. And so he comes up, he gets his Minnesota fix every summer. There was a great story when he played in Duluth about 20 years ago, and the Duluth News Tribune were interviewing people from Hibbing, and they talked to this old-timer who was probably younger than Dylan is today. They said, have you ever seen Bob Dylan up here? And the guy goes, no. He goes, but last summer I saw a 20-foot black stretch limo come through town with a canoe on top.
is Bob a big canoer?
I would put nothing past that guy, you know.
When you look back on his deep discography, I think the best way to kind of look at it is you look through the kind of as the decades go. Why don't you talk a little bit about, you know, from your perspective as a musician, the better albums that, you know, as we are, is 80th anniversary, and there are a lot of people, there are a lot of younger people out there that might not have experienced Dylan. If you want to drive people to specific albums, which ones, as you go through his career, would you say, you know what, you can't miss with that?
Well, there's, you know, 39 bona fide studio releases, but what I would suggest to anyone, young or old, to dig is some of these bootleg series they've been putting out, where a lot of the songs never made it on the regular records. Song like Blind Willie McTell, which he recorded with Mark Knopfler for Infidels, never made it on the record, but it came on a box set in 85, and now you can track that one down. I think you can find something in every record he's put on. A record I really love that I was listening on my way to Duluth yesterday is called Under the Red Sky. Mm-hmm. And that record got panned when it came out. It's got a song called Born in Time and the title track, Under the Red Sky, with a great slide guitar solo by George Harrison. It's just lovely. So you might not need every song to resonate with you, but there's good stuff on every record. Now, you got to dig. The guy's written over 600 songs. And he built his style on the bedrock of Roots American music, blues, country, bluegrass, folk, and he's got a gospel influence, and he can improvise, like a jazz cat. So he is really a master musicologist who absorbed every style of American music, coupled it with his voracious reading habits. He loves reading about the Civil War, his love of surrealism, poetry, and all the great poets, you know, the Italian poet from the 13th century, as the song says, Entangled Up in Blue. So he's an amalgamation of all the great American cultural influences that we had. And then he's absorbed everything else that he's read and heard in his life. He's just an amazing human being. We are lucky, I think, Matt, to live in his time.
Mm-hmm. I always love the fact that he got to New York to see Woody Guthrie.
Yeah.
Before Guthrie died. Go ahead.
No, I actually had a conversation with Ramblin' Jack Elliott about a project that I'm kind of keeping on the QT right now. But Ramblin' Jack said, he goes, I remember the day Bob showed up to visit Woody at the hospital. And it's like, you know, for me, that's like going back and meeting Moses and go, Moses, that sixth commandment, how did you come up with that one? That sounds to my kill. It's a killer commandment, you know. But so for me, you know, I love, you know, listening to Dylan, studying Dylan, and then all of his influences. Once you get into the guy, you realize he's got his touchstones are scattered all over the American landscape.
You know, and you said it earlier, and I want to bring this back again. He did not meet these people in the way that a lot of modern musicians will team up with someone so they can do this glitzy, look who I'm working with now. As you said, you talk about, oh, he worked with Knopfler, he worked with Harrison. You usually didn't find out about those people being involved with these albums until, oh, George Harrison's on this album. You know, like, it was like he looked at Guthrie, and I think that everyone that he worked with as kind of a worker training program, that it was a way for him to, I'm going to make myself better. How do I do it? And it was never about the glory. It was about being the best musician he possibly could be.
You're absolutely right, man. You know, he used to call himself, when he moved out to New York, and before that, he was learning the stuff in Dinkytown. He called himself a Woody Guthrie jukebox. And you can go back and hear some of these tapes where he'll do, you know, he'll be sitting around a coffee table, he'll sing 25 Woody Guthrie songs, you know, without missing a verse. No, he's a very studied musician that has absorbed every important American music style.
Yes.
Which is what, that's one of his lessons to a young Paul Metz, that was like, listen to everybody, read everything. Don't be afraid to try a style you're uncomfortable with. And he did it, and what you really have to appreciate, he did it suffering the slings and arrows of outrageous criticism from every corner, and it never stopped him.
I've always been a fan of Desolation Row.
Oh yeah,
I love it. That is a dark. That is a dark song. I mean, his the way that he could write. I mean, you talk about the. It goes all genres. I mean, I hear in him gospel and country and blues, bluesgrass. I hear hard rock. I hear prog. I mean, you hear pop music. It just he was never afraid to just be who he was. And I think once again, going back to that first point is, don't be afraid. Just go do it. You can be a guy from Hibbing, Minnesota, in Iron Range, and go on out there and become one of the most influential musicians in the history of mankind, but you just got to go do it.
You know, Eric Clapton, I mean, I've learned enough about him, and I've met a lot of Bob's friends over the years, and I worked with Bucky Baxter, who produced a record of mine called Whistling Past the Graveyard, while he was playing in Bob Dylan's band. And so I get a lot of the inside track stuff, which is really fun. But I remember Eric Clapton said something like, Dylan, he goes, the only guy I know, we could be on stage in front of 100,000 people, and he'll turn his back to the audience and teach you the song you're about to play. That's balls, baby.
I will be remiss. I have to. I want to ask you one thing. Tomorrow we celebrate. Remember, I should say. We celebrate Bob Dylan today. Tomorrow we're going to remember what happened to George Floyd. The long term, the social impact of Bob Dylan, and that although two very different people known for two very different reasons, you can't deny that both of them were trying to change society as we know it.
Absolutely, and you know I don't want to sound self-serving, but I wrote a new version of my song Slow Justice that I wrote in 1984 originally for the P9 strike down in Austin, Minnesota. And then I recently recut, you can find it's called Slow Justice 2.0, with a line that references George Floyd and, you know, the unrest that we went through here in Minneapolis. And but Dylan, you know, Woody Guthrie was the first one to really start singing about songs of social justice. And then Bob was able to take those lessons and put his take on it with his huge platform and really created and highlighted the civil rights movement in the 1960s as we knew it. I had a beautiful evening with producer Bob Johnston, who produced Simon and Garfunkel and Johnny Cash at Folsom Prison, and several Bob Dylan records. And he told me as we were driving on one smoky evening through the hills of Austin, Texas, the foothills, and he said, you know, Bob Dylan stopped the Vietnam War. And his point was his songs like Blown in the Wind and The Times They're Changing, that was the song that gave the folks at that time songs to sing, energy to take this to the streets. And so you still see the reverberations of that with the incredible outpouring of support after the tragic murder of George Floyd. May he rest in peace.
Indeed. And that we're going to be living with the impact of Bob Dylan and George Floyd for so long. I will say this. It's still great that we were able to celebrate Bob. It's amazing he's going back on the road.
Well, he's been doing 100 dates a year for 30 years. It's called a never-ending tour, you know. And you think about it. It's, you know, you go out and play a two-hour show. As a musician, I know what that takes, you know, to be on for 2 hours to play. But then you're also talking about 12 hours in a van or 12, you know, he's got a nice tour bus. But he spent his life doing his work, and God bless him. I mean, even if you don't dig his music, you got to dig his work ethic, man. Yeah. Because who has a job anymore, the same job for 60 freaking years? You know who does? Bob Dylan.
Yeah. That's exactly it. Paul Mezzo, Wall of Power Radio Hour, 6 to 7 on Saturdays. We're going to go on out, Paul. This is a song that you did. It's My Back Pages. Talk about this really quick before we play it.
One of my favorite Bob Dylan songs that has the great line, I was so much older then, I'm younger than that now. Bob Dylan's younger than that now at 80 than he was when he wrote it. And I did it, and I had a couple of the guys from Blood on the Tracks, Peter Ostrowski and Kevin Odegaard. Peter Lang played on it. Matt Fink was on piano from Prince's band. We did about 10 or 11 years ago at Wolf Park in St. Louis Park. It's a live version. You're playing the version from YouTube, which people can track down.
Paul, thank you very much. I'll repost that a little bit later myself. Thank you, Paul. All my best. Have a great day. Drive safe, my friend.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks for the phone call. You too. Bye-bye.
My pleasure. Paul Mezzo. It's always better when we get Paul Mezzo on the air. Let's play that song. We'll play this for a little bit as we go on out here. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950.
Oh, yeah. How much fire on flame and roll? Easy, why easy, my friend? We'll meet on edges soon, said I. Proud me, heated by. Oh, but I was so much older than I'm younger than that now. I've read prejudice leads for. Rip down all heat and scream. Life's in life is black.